Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
All right, so let's do this now. Let's talk a little bit more about the situation with the Browns and what's going on. I love having our next guest on. He's always outstanding. You remember him from Roaming the Sidelines with the Browns and all throughout the NFL. You can come get some with him right now on TV. He is former Browns coach Greg Williams, and he is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hey, Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great, fellas. Thanks for having me on. And When I hear the introduction, it brings a big smile to my face. You know, I love that area. I love everything about it. You know, and again, I'm moving up to that area. I finally sold my home in St. Louis. And so it's great. Always enjoy being on this line.
So you're going to be locked in. You're locked in 24/7 now, right? Because you got family here. That's why.
Yeah, I got family here. I'm going to be locked in 24/7. You know, right now, I happen to be in Excelsior Springs, Missouri, just outside of Kansas City, because I drove in here and surprised for Thanksgiving weekend. I surprised my parents. My dad turned 91 a couple of weeks ago. My mom is 87.
Wow.
And my dad has ripped my ass and chewed my ass, you know, since I've been here. And so it brings back great memories and smiles.
What's he said? Get a job?
Oh,
and
yeah,
you said, come get some, Dad. That's what you said to him, right?
I said it to him, but you'll love this, is that we watch the games together, and he has his opinions, and back and forth. And, you know, last night, you know, he had the same, you know, some opinions, too, about the game. It was funny as all get out. And I said, well, you haven't changed a bit. And he says, and you haven't gotten any smarter.
I love it. Hey, you know, there's a million questions I have about last night's game. I need your expertise on this one. How was Jerry Jeudy open so much last night against a team that's been very good defensively, in fact, really good inside the red zone? How did the Browns pull that off last night?
Well, a couple of things. First off, I thought Kevin and Ken did a really good job formationally on declaring man or zone coverage for Jameis. And they did a very good job on doing some pre-snap declarations so that Jameis would know this. But Vance kind of uncharacteristically played a lot more zone coverage, and Jameis understood that. Now, the zone coverage came from the ability to run the ball, and I think that maybe Denver was a little bit more concerned about the run than obviously when your quarterback throws for 490 yards, you know, you might want to make sure that they try to run the ball. But that was an interesting there, too. And as you see, since Jameis has been the quarterback, you know, some of the records that Judy's setting receiver-wise, he's gone from, you know, being 30th in the league on targets and receptions, now up he's in the top five in the league. And that's just because of Jameis and his relationship and or understanding about what each other's doing.
Coach, I mean, I'm sure you've had guys that have played sort of with a chip on their shoulder. Does it make a difference for a guy like Jerry Jeudy walking into Denver and this being sort of a get-back game for him, does it make a true difference?
Yes, it does. There's no doubt about it, because you're looking as a coach. I'm looking to try to find that kind of a spark each and every day, each and every game. But yes, it does. And if it doesn't, then you don't belong. And in the National Football League, if you can't carry that edge each and every week, but then it even ramps up higher when those type of situations going back in that stadium, you don't belong in the National Football League, because it's such a – the parity is so strong and everybody can flat play, and the only way you're going to have a chance to stay one more day is play with that chip on your shoulder.
Greg, when you see that Jameis Winston, let's just say you just woke up this morning, you're like, he threw the ball 57 times for 497 yards. When you have a quarterback that's throwing the ball 57 or 58 times a game, doesn't that normally mean bad news? Like, that means you couldn't get your running game going.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you put it that way, because you would know that I'm going to be the guest speaker for the entire week in the offensive line room and the running back room, and we're going to do things, joint meetings together. Because why can't we run the ball? For what reason can't we? And again, I did that when I became the interim coach at the Browns. I did that same thing. And, you know, and again, I smile on my face the very first day that I'm the head coach on a Wednesday practice. You know, defensively, you know, we're kicking the snot out of them like we had for 2 years already. And we have five fights in practice. And, you know, defensive line and the defensive guys are just slapping the offensive guys around, and I pull them all together at the end of practice, and I rip the offense about that. You know, how you continue to take this stuff. You know, you're going to have to fight back. The next day, the next practice, we had 37 fights in the very first team period. So I had to call them all together, and I said, well, it looks like we finally dropped our testicles, and now offensive, you guys are now starting to fight back. And then at that point in time, I said, now look, every fight from now on is going to be $5,000 to that person, and I'm going to double it, 10, 20, 40, 80. I don't care. I'm going to keep doubling it if you continue to fight, because now we have that mentality. We have that understanding. And then, boom, that's how we turned it around. And the offensive line at the Browns, and back in that time I was there, I mean, they're big-time Pro Bowlers there. And there's some big-time, really good, hard-nosed players there right now. They have to get that physical. This is my blade of grass. This is my yard. This is my space. I'm knocking you out in order to run the football. Because Nick Chubb has that. I'm telling you, he's one of the best guys I've been around, and that mentality has to be that way so you're not putting so much pressure on the quarterback.
Greg, from a coaching perspective, you look at Jameis Winston last night. Obviously, you, as a coach, you're disappointed with the loss. But how do you go about evaluating that from an individual perspective? You throw for almost 500 yards, but you also have the three picks and the two pick sixes. Are you encouraged by that performance overall, or is that one where you step back and are sort of disappointed?
After a win, if those kind of things were going on, I'm tearing testicles off. I'm blistering that person or anybody else. But after a loss, okay, I'm still going to be pretty strong on those mistakes, but more encouraging. But that's been a history with Jameis too, and you know, making better decisions, and then the ability and again, you know, a lot lower level. I played the position of quarterback, and I was an offensive coordinator for 10 years too. The biggest thing that has to be overemphasized is an incompletion is not a bad pass. An incompletion is not a bad pass. You don't take a sack, and you don't, okay, turn the ball over. And those things have to continue to be emphasized. And it's not something that is, I guess, overemphasized that you're slowing people down. I see people talking about that, you know, that they were doing that with Caleb Williams, or they were doing that with this quarterback, that quarterback. Hey, you didn't play. You have no idea. Go ahead and continue to make commentary about that. But that's not what goes on. You have to make the correct decisions. And I really, really like what Kevin and Ken are doing, and if people, there's not enough comments out there right now on how they've morphed the offense back to Kevin's regime of the offense and doing things that Jameis can do. But there were a couple of throws last night in my head, you know, and I think, and what in, you know, went through that thing. And there is a science of talking back and forth with each other. A player can understand within 10 seconds whether you're full of crap or not by not being able to understand what he has to do. And the fact that I ask questions and it's a back and forth between me and you, all of a sudden that particular person has a understanding, hey, Coach Williams knows what he's talking about. I need to listen to him more. And he needs to have that discussion more with Ken Dorsey and throw an incompletion.
It's interesting you bring some of this stuff up because we were talking about what Troy Aikman said about Deshaun Watson being an albatross and where they are with that. And that, you know, we've watched Kevin for the last 2 years be able to take Jameis Winston and be able to take Joe Flacco and make something out of nothing when it came to the quarterback spot. Well, what does this all say about Kevin, the offense, and having patience with him as a head coach?
Kevin's a really good coach, you know, and I just shake my head when people, you know, again, they're out there making the comments about, you know, he's not very good or whatever it is, you know. And again, mom and dad don't take enough blame because their son is doing things that mom and dad let them do their whole life, and mom and dad couldn't do it either. Kevin's a good coach. He is a very, very good coach. There's a different style of coaching. There's a different style of interacting, and he's very intelligent. He's a very good coach, and I do, and I watch him like a hawk on the sideline. Every single coach that I've ever coached against is once I get the personnel packages masked up, all I do, I don't look at the field until it's time for the ball to be snapped. I look at the sideline and watch what's going on in interaction and the thought processes and stuff and how long they're holding the piece of paper up against their mouth and making the call into the game. Now I don't have to worry about that. I watch Kevin whenever the TV will put it on there. He's a really good coach. And now Andrew Berry. Andrew Berry's a really good GM too. And they've done some really, really good things on how they have, again, got guys coming in there and improved the roster drastically from the time I was there. Now it's about fitting in with the people that you do have. Find out those mistakes as quick as you can and get on to the next game.
The conversation today has been pretty heavily on the offense, but I think defensively, the Browns a little stunned too. They couldn't stop the run to save their lives. They didn't get to Bo Nix for all but two QB hits, no sacks. I mean, what did you see that went wrong defensively then for the Browns?
You know, I appreciate you saying that because I know, you know, everybody knows Jim Schwartz and I go back to being on the same staff together, and I hired him back in the late 90s at the Titans, and I think he's an outstanding coach too, and I think he's got a strong staff there. Now, the number one best offensive coach in my 36-plus years in the NFL that I've coached against or coached with is Sean Payton. And Sean Payton does an outstanding job and an understanding of competition imbalances, competitions, advantages and stuff. I thought he did a really good job, and he's gone against Jim Schwartz in many places at Detroit and Philadelphia and at Tennessee. He's gone against him in many places. So Sean keeps a very detailed scouting report game by game by game. I thought he did a very good job, and let's talk about this. You see how well Sean has changed the habits of Bo Nix. In the very first four games of the year, you're saying, oh, Sean Payton, what a stupid pick. Why did he pick him with the 12th pick? He could have picked somebody else. Hey, now and take the next 8, 9, 10 games and see what he has done on decision processing and how he goes about formationally, okay, showing the quarterback what the defense is doing. I will tell you this. I was a little bit shocked that they were able to, you know, get a couple of explosive passes. And the one, you know, on the one long one right there, that was a trick coverage that Jim has done and I've done for a long time, where you're playing the Tampa cover two, but you're showing a cover three, a middle of the field close with a safety, and all of a sudden Denzel's got to run back and play the half, and Denzel was inches away from making an interception because they baited Denver into throwing that vertical route. So Jim Schwartz baited that route to come out, and then boom, Denzel had a chance, okay, a close chance to make that play. And, again, one more time about Sean Payton. He's also one of the best coaches that when he can predict zone of running the four vertical concepts, and you saw a lot of that last night where he was running four verts, so that now if you mess up, I got a chance for a big explosive play, and a couple of those happened last night.
Don't you think Sean's waking this morning going, I've got this great red zone defense, they're great at goal to goal, and what did the Browns do last night that everyone else hasn't been able to do against Denver?
You know, and again, they made very quick decisions, and you did, and those are some of the quickest decisions I think I have seen Jameis make. And I think they did a very, very, very good job in the zone coverages. And for whatever reason, Vance played more zone, okay, down there than normally that he did. And boom, they had really, really good answers to that. And Ken and Kevin both had good answers to that. And, you know, it was I want to hope I can bring a smile to your face, because both of those guys, Jim Schwartz and Vance Joseph, dominant, really good defensive coaches, was so pissed off last night because it looked like we were allergic to play defense on either side of the sideline. Okay, you know, when you're talking about 500 yards on one side, 400 yards on the other side, you know, I'm thinking, holy cow, I'd have been, you know, pissed off and wouldn't have been able to sleep all night long.
Mm-hmm. All right, Greg, last question for you. When are you done with the media stuff? When are you going back on the sidelines? I'm going to ask you every time I talk to you.
Very quick. Very quick, yeah. So I've got a lot of things going on, and a lot of people are calling and talking to me about it. But, again, I think I told you guys and the fans too, I walked away from a couple things in the NFL the last 2 years because I told Dwayne The Rock Johnson that I'd help him do this. In the UFL, it was the XFL, because a minor league is very, very, very important to the National Football League. And I talked to Roger Goodell about this also. You know, they need it. They're the only professional sports league in the world that doesn't have a minor league. We did for a long time with the World League, with NFL Europe and all that kind of stuff, where the NFL was bought into those. Now, the NFL needs to buy into this UFL. But there's going to be some openings, you know, come up here right now that people are calling and talking to me about, so we'll see.
Sounds like a plan. Greg, as always, thank you. Come get some with Blake and Greg Williams. You got to make sure you check that out as well. Thank you for your time. We always appreciate talking to you, my man. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you very much. And, you bring a smile on my face on come get some, and I'm glad you didn't say the last word that I usually use, too.
All right. Happy holidays to you and the family. Thank you, Coach.
You too. Have a great day.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Greg Williams, former Browns coach, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We'll digest some of the things that he said, and we'll get back to the Browns Therapy Tuesday.
Well, a couple of things. First off, I thought Kevin and Ken did a really good job formationally on declaring man or zone coverage for Jameis. And they did a very good job on doing some pre-snap declarations so that Jameis would know this. But
yeah, it was interesting last night. If you're listening to the game on the radio too, they kept talking about the pre-snap movement for the Browns and their ability to kind of throw some different formations that they haven't seen, or at least Denver maybe they haven't seen all season long too. So that was Greg Williams come get some with Blake and Greg Williams on TV these days, and then it's their podcast, and obviously a former Browns coach and was an interim coach here for a little while. It's funny, like, when I talk about Greg, because I've said this to Greg's face, like, he's the guy you wanted to play for if you were playing. But I'm going to just I didn't want to ask him, but do you really think there were 39 fights in one practice after he took over the offense? 39. I mean, he was exact. He knew exactly how many fights there were in that practice.
Yeah, I feel like that's a a little bit of a high number. I don't know. But it, when it's exact, it makes you question it. You go, 39 is a really weird number to pull out of your head, but also...
Yeah, that's weird. So maybe that made me believe him because he said 39. If he would have said, we had about 30 fights, I'd be like, okay, I definitely believe that. But the fact that he knew he had 39 exactly?
Yeah, like, is that something that you kept track of, you tallied it, and you never forgot?
Is, well, you go back, fights? I mean, they have a million cameras at practice, so maybe they went back and did it. I listen to Greg, and I love when he's on. I get all kinds of texts all day. People are like, oh, we love when you have Greg on. He's awesome. What else did you get out of that interview?
Well, I thought the stuff right there, actually, the pre-snap motion was something. Is that not something we hammered on for Kevin Stefanski, sort of almost an outdated offense of you never use pre-snap motion?
Right.
It's been coming to the NFL so largely because of exactly what Greg talked about. You can sort of identify the coverage. You move somebody around, and the defense is going to have to adjust and sort of tip their hand. I think it was something that Kevin Stefanski got a knock for. It was something that bringing in Ken Dorsey, you expected to bring on that fix. And to hear Greg's view as a coach sort of point that out and hammer that home in a day where the offense looked really good, I think is really promising.
Let me ask you this question. And, you know, we're sitting here on a Browns Therapy Tuesday. If you want to get it off your chest after watching last night's game, please feel free to do so. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Does last night change your mind about Kevin Stefanski? Like, I'm wondering if there are people out there going, I think Kevin's a bad coach. I don't think I've never felt that. I like Kevin. I think Kevin does a nice job. And I think that when you get into these games, that it sets the stage to say, wait a minute, look what Kevin's doing, right? Look what Ken Dorsey did last night. Like, a week ago, we couldn't stand him. 2 weeks ago, before they beat Pittsburgh, you're like, oh, Ken Dorsey's got to go, got to go, got to go. I know there are a lot of fans out there that want to see Kevin go, too. I just, when I watch him and the success that you see offensively, again, the interceptions taken aback from both the quarterbacks that I'm about to talk about, but the success that he had with Joe Flacco, the success that he's having right now with Jameis Winston, does that not intrigue you to want to see him a little bit more? Does that not change your mind about, well, wait a second, you know, they're throwing the quarterback. The coach can only coach the folks that he's got, right? He can only coach the players that he has. You hear that a million times, especially when somebody gets hurt. You're like, well, next man up. I can only coach who's out here.
Yeah, I mean,
if you truly believe he didn't bring in Deshaun Watson, I don't know why you would be in a hurry to get him out of here.
Yeah, I think when you've seen Kevin Stefanski sort of handle an offense with everyone except for Deshaun Watson, it's looked good. And I don't... I guess I don't have a better way to put it when I look at Joe Flacco and Jameis Winston. I use the term like washed up, but I know they're not. Like washed up might have described what people felt about Joe Flacco. I don't think it really encapsulates what people felt
more
about
so
Jameis.
Because he's older, right?
Yeah. But like Jameis was sort of considered this, you know what you're going to get with him. Probably not going to be anybody's starter. He had some time in New Orleans and it was like, he might be able to serve as a good backup. He's a guy that, if he has to step into a role, he might be able to give you that sort of spark that Joe Flacco gave you, right? A few games, he can look good for it. I just think Kevin sort of turned the narrative on those guys. He got Joe Flacco another contract. He went from sitting on his couch in October of a season to then playing for the Browns to then earning another contract on a different team where he is the backup and got an opportunity to start this year, not because of injury, but because... The Colts felt that was the better option at the time. Like, he turns narratives on guys, on everyone except for Deshaun Watson. I don't know how you look at Kevin Stefanski and think he's been a bad coach, not he was sort of dealt a bad hand with the entire Deshaun situation.
But I don't know that fans are looking at it. I don't think fans are saying he was dealt a bad hand. They just expect him to do whatever it takes, even last year with four quarterbacks, even this year with, again, like, I want this epiphany, and I want this answer that, yes, someone decided the Browns, that they had to have Deshaun Watson, and this is the way it was going to be, and that Kevin found himself stuck in the situation.
Well, then what are we doing? We're playing two sides of the coin. You say Deshaun's terrible. You got to get him out of here. He's not good enough. But then you're also saying, well, Kevin Stefanski should have figured it out. Only one of those things can be true at once. Like, if the quarterback is that bad, how do you expect the head coach to figure it out?
Well, that's why he's the head coach. He's got to figure things out.
Well, he did. He benched him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how
I guess he didn't bench Deshaun, but Deshaun got injured, and you turn to Jameis, and now he's got it figured out. Same thing happened last year. Deshaun gets injured, you turn to Joe Flacco after trial runs with DTR and PJ Walker, but you turn to Joe Flacco and things are figured out. You give him a quarterback that is more prototypical to the type of offense that he likes to run. Miraculously, things look good. Who would have thought? Who would have thought you give a quarterback his or a head coach his more style pick at quarterback, and his offense seems to function better? You can't just expect a coach to be thrown any guy, even if it's a good quarterback. I don't think that's what you have in Deshaun, but even if you say this guy's a good quarterback, coaches get into the spots because they run a certain scheme. They know things that work. They have to stick to what they know works and what they do well. You can't just toss a guy like Deshaun who had no fit in the system and on top of it has not played well even when put into a situation to sort of excel and flourish at what he does well at, and then go back and blame it on coach again. I don't think you can play both sides like that.
Well, I think fans are wanting to sit here and they're wanting, I mean, they still want to blame Kevin Stefanski. Ken Dorsey, I listened to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland podcast, and like there was one time where Daryl just came straight out and said, this has got to change. He can't be here anymore. And after you watch last night's game, can you truly say that? Because you know Kevin Stefanski didn't throw the pick six. You know Ken Dorsey didn't throw a pick six. That's on Jameis. And, you know, if there are folks that think, and I'll go back to what Mary Kay said to us earlier today, maybe we need to get on the slower train with Jameis when you start. You can sit here and be all excited about almost throwing for 500, but you also can't ignore the pick sixes. Now, again, Jaquan McMillan's pick six was unbelievable. And I don't know, that might have happened to any quarterback in the NFL. Okay? I get that one. But the third interception also is very bothersome. I think there are a lot of folks that look at that third interception and go, well, you didn't even put yourself in the chance to even have the opportunity to make an onside kick, to try to make the onside kick, because you forced the ball at the end. It was a bad decision. It just was.
Yeah, I don't think that's a reflection on Kevin Stefanski's offense, though. Like, again, you have to pick one side of it. It was bad quarterback play. It was really good quarterback play comboed with bad. You got Jameis Winston. Congratulations. You knew what you had, and you got it all wrapped up in one game. You got Browns records being set for passing yards in a game. You also got two pick sixes and a third interception to boot in an instance where you still sort of had a chance. I don't know. I just think you can't blame it all on Kevin. When he's had quarterbacks that have even been middle of the line, guys who could sort of put it together, the offense has looked good, and I think Ken Dorsey's done a good job to sort of freshen that up, liven it up, and make it look a little bit more new age than Kevin had it before.
Odyssey insider Jason LaCanfora is going to join us at 1 o'clock, so we will hear from him, and I'm not sure if you caught what he wrote what he wrote about Kevin Stefanski. We're going to tell you what it was when we come back, and then we're going to ask Jason about it at 1 o'clock. So it is a Browns Therapy Tuesday. Get it off your chest. We'll be talking to all of you when we come back. 216-474-0092. It's Baskin and Phelps. And, of course, Jake Volnick is in today. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3. The Fan. Jake Volnick is in today. 216-474-0092. It is a Browns Therapy Tuesday. Talking about last night's game where the Browns lost to the Broncos 41-32. Jameis Winston with almost 500 yards of passing. I know we've spent a lot of time talking today. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's hear what everybody has to say, especially right now as we get into the therapy. We want to make sure that you're okay. We're worried about you. I always worry about Cool Ray in Bedford. Cool Ray, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. It's my birthday. Somebody get some things.
Today is your birthday?
Happy birthday.
Yeah, it is.
Happy birthday, Cool Ray. Happy birthday, my friend.
Thanks. Well, first, Jameis, let me tell you something, man. If you need divine intervention to help you stop throwing pick sixes, please be a coach, because you're not a quarterback. 100%. But I got a question to ask your co-host, because everybody keeps saying this. You can't blame the coach. You can't blame the players. If you have a coach that can't adjust to the players who may be coming out of college, then who do you blame as far as a quarterback? If you have a system and the quarterback is not coming out of college fit your system, where do you get the quarterback to win? You have to adjust as a coach. You're just on wins and losses, no matter who you have a quarterback.
So, Corey, I think that's the case, though. I think that's the case when you're talking about building around a guy who is coming out of college. You're bringing him up. Your job then as the head coach is to get that guy to be the guy. You were supposed to have already brought in the guy who never fit with Kevin Stefanski. Like, you went out and got somebody who you know what they were and then ask them to switch everything.
But isn't this what happens in the league most of the times where contracts, for whatever reason, quarterbacks move on, unless it's a franchise, like Patrick Mahomes and stuff like that. But most quarterbacks have this issue, and most coaches get the best out the players. Now we understand that you might look for a guy that's your guy, but you have to be entrenched in with winning with your record as a coach to have a winning record as a coach to say, listen, this is how it's going to be done. When you're coming in as a offensive coordinator and your defense won 9 games for you last year, if not more, and you have went 2 seasons where you could say a success, but then 3 seasons when they were not successful, then you handed a quarterback that was, for all intents and purposes, one of the top 10 quarterbacks, and then you say you can't get it together with this guy? Now, either we believe that it had to have been something personal because y'all two wasn't clicking, and okay, that's fine. Because of the outside stuff, we can get that. But you as a coach, any coach, is judged on wins and losses. It's judged on productivity. And you're going to have to make adjustments every single year because of contracts or whatever situation is, not just at the quarterback position, but at every position. So when people start talking about how Kevin is not expendable, he's very expendable if we cannot get this together, because we have – this is the most talented team that Cleveland had since the Bernie Kosar, Kevin Mag. The talent we have on this team, we should have been – to at least AFC Championship game 3 out of the 4 years. We haven't. That's facts.
Corey.
That's 100% facts.
Gotcha. Thank you. We want to get some other folks today, Corey. Appreciate your time, your perspective, your thoughts on
it. Yeah, Kevin Stefanski has adjusted, has he not? If he's being judged on wins, last year he did even win 6 games with Deshaun Watson. Didn't he win another 6 games with Joe Flacco?
He had to do it with 4 quarterbacks last year, too.
He's been the king of adjustments. The only time he has not made it work has been with Deshaun Watson. Tell me why that is, because in my eyes, very clearly points to just not a very good quarterback.
Well, the other part of it is if the player doesn't want to buy into the system that the coaches have, then you're not going to win either way. The coach, I mean, and what is supposed to happen? If you're a coach that has a successful system and the player doesn't want to buy into it, the player's got to go.
Yeah, and by the way, like, he was still making Deshaun look semi-productive last season at points. This year, when you change the offense, bring in Ken Dorsey and try to adjust it and make it fit Deshaun is when it went the worst. When you went away from Kevin's system, even with Deshaun.
Bill is in Kent. Hi, Bill.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you? It's a therapy. It's a therapy Tuesday. Yeah, right back at you.
Hey, first of all, Greg Williams, I love that guy. I mean, I know he had shortcomings and throughout his career, but I thought he did a great job in Cleveland, and his intensity is just you love that kind of energy. But, you know, you're talking about
Dan
Kevin.
Campbell, same thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think there's still a place for that. I think players react to that. But, you know, back to Kevin, and maybe a little bit different take from Cool Ray, but I think he's done a terrific job. And I was talking with my youngest son yesterday who does mock drafts, and he loved Brock Purdy as an example coming out of college. And he and I said there's 3 coaches in football that we think if you agreed on your system, you picked – a guy in the 3rd, 4th, 5th round that had the tools, the arm, the size, the smarts, everything. There's 3 guys in football, I think, that I would trust to develop them. One is Kyle Shanahan, one is Sean Payton, and the other is Kevin. And, you know, the Browns, they've talked about this debate, should they spend their first pick on a quarterback? The only one that I think is probably worth it is Cam Ward, and most people seem to think he's going to be gone by the time the Browns would be drafting, wherever that is. We'll wait and see. But to me, if you found the right kid, you know, with a 4th pick or a 5th pick, and DTR, were it not for his slight size and his propensity to want to run and injury proneness, look what Kevin has done with him in the few times we've seen him. So I think I would like to see us use our first 3 picks, rebuild the line, you know, get some core pieces here, and then find a guy that fits the mold that the Browns want to go forward with. And I don't see how that can be Watson. And let Stefanski develop him, because I think he's one of the few guys in the league that can do that based on his track record. So last thing I'll say, sure. And watch his tape. the Old Timers Hall of Fame. I heard, you know, the selections. Sonny Randall, wide receiver, Cardinals. Best wide receiver in football from 61 to 67. Go back and watch his tape.
Outstanding.
He should be a Hall of Famer.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. Yeah, now about Art Modell being off the list.
Yeah. Well, can't be. All right, are we allowed to gloat about it?
You know, it's funny. We get in these conversations and, I'm done. I've turned the page on that.
Yeah.
We get in these conversations about quarterbacks coming, you know, in the draft. And I want to see what Drew Aller looks like this week against Oregon.
You think he's going to come out? I don't think he actually comes out this year.
I don't know if he does. Yeah.
I think you probably look at a much higher draft pick next year if he's able to play well again under James Franklin and Penn State.
I don't know if it's a weak quarterback draft and the opportunity is there for him to be draft higher. I don't know.
But you're already considered to not be one of the premier quarterbacks in the class. Like, if you're going to be not a premier quarterback again next year, wouldn't you rather have the extra year, make some NIL money, and then you are another year better when you actually get to an NFL team and maybe don't putter out so fast?
Yeah, I know. I mean, everyone here wants to be hung up on the Ohio State game, but I just think there's something about him. And I'm not saying he is the wrong coach at Penn State. There is definitely something about that kid. Did you see him play in high school?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I see that he's just so much bigger than he was at Medina, but I'm completely intrigued by him. And I don't know, maybe I'm partial because I watched him play in high school a little bit, but I'm completely intrigued by that. All right, let's take some more phone calls. Sorry to derail that quarterback.
No, I don't think he's a terrible terrible option. I got to look at late.
Dan is in Lakewood. Hey, Dan.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's going on with you? Browns Therapy Tuesday, that's what it is.
Yeah, well, you know what, for therapy, I think everybody's just got to let go of James Winston right now. Let him go. He's not going to be our quarterback for the future, okay? I mean, I don't want him for my future quarterback. So we need to start figuring out what we're going to do. I think you got to start with DTR, and this is what, his third year in the league now? It's time for him to either crap or get off the pot. If he's not worth keeping, then he's got to go.
So what's that leave you with then?
Well, then
you're back to Deshaun.
At least you know now what is not good, okay?
Okay.
So now we got to go look for that quarterback. And I got enough. I'm going to tell you what. I've seen enough of Stefanski that I think he can go out there and pick up basically any quarterback you want out there and do a halfway decent job, okay? So let's say we go into the draft and there's nobody there, okay? Then you got to find somebody. He's done it with Flacco. They've done it with Flacco. They've done it with Jameis Winston. I think they can get a guy, okay, that can do what's been done here.
Let's see, Dan. Let's see what they can do. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And I think Ken and Kevin can work with a quarterback. I mean, am I reluctant to say it? Yeah, because we haven't seen success. But I really do. I do believe in those guys, and I know it drives people crazy when I say that. All right, when we come back, we are going to bring in Jason Lockhand for it. I'm not sure if anyone caught this. It was in the Washington Post. I know Jeff talked about this a little bit last week. He was talking about Mike Vrabel, and then he came back and said he's incredibly well positioned now, and he's working as a consultant with the Browns, who probably would pursue him if Kevin Stefanski was let go. Some coaches and executives know how, and this was the other part of it. So he said, some coaches and executives who know Stefanski think he would be cool getting out of that cesspool now, being home for the holidays and getting ready to prepare for future interviews elsewhere. That was in the Washington Post. Well, guess what? Jason Lockhand for us next. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.